Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Happy Friday to you. Full show ahead today. We'll kick off with Colleen Mathis, who is in studio, the chair of the last Independent Redistricting Commission here in Arizona. We'll talk about Arizona not getting another congressional seat, news that broke this week, and what comes next for the new Independent Redistricting Commission. We'll also chat at the bottom of the hour with Cedric Cook. We'll talk about the work of Pillars and Bridges of Tucson to build bridges between neighbors and law enforcement. So a fun show today. 790-2040 is the number you can call to have a local conversation with local people talking about local issues that matter to us. But I want to get right into it here. Colleen Mathis did not call in that number because you are in studio, and it's great to see you. How are you?
Likewise, Zach. I'm very well and delighted to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. This is going to be good. So let's jump right in. Definitely want to talk about the Redistricting Commission and the work ahead. But what do you make of Arizona not getting a new congressional district, something that went against all the political pundits on the right or the left? A fast-growing state. We've gained a congressional seat since every census since the 1950s. This is kind of a rare, weird moment. What do you make of it? What do you think happened?
Well, I agree, first of all. I was surprised like everyone else. And when someone like Dave Wasserman, who is the national political editor for Cook Political Report, national house editor, I think is his title, he said of all the results that the fact that Arizona lost a seat was the most surprising. I mean, it didn't gain a seat, right. Was the most surprising. Everyone expected it. In terms of why it happened, gosh, we won't know the rest of the results of the census until September, when the ethnicity and race and rest of the demographics come out. All we know right now is total population and that we didn't grow as fast as the other states. So it remains to be seen what happened, and all we can do, we're stuck with that number for the decade. And so all we can do is hope that next time we learn from whatever happened this time, once we find out, and then actually not do that again, because it hurts everybody, frankly, when we're undercounted. You know, that census number directs $1.5 trillion across the country. Oof. And it's based on population. So, right. You know, we're not going to get our share back, essentially, if we're undercounted. So that's a travesty.
Right. Now, you mentioned that ethnicity data, as one part of the data set, it's part of what I'm imagining are a few things that the current Independent Redistricting Commission are waiting for. They're waiting for that data until September.
That's right.
To really start the process of redrawing the lines. Now, they're not working off of the lines that your team set. They're looking at the state as a whole now, really restarting and going, what is the makeup of our 9 districts? How does this impact the process of redistricting in Arizona?
Well, that's exactly right. The new commission does not start from our old lines. They start from a clean slate. It's actually laid out in the Arizona Constitution as to the steps that they need to follow. So a lot of people, I think, have the misconception that you just adjust the lines accordingly based on the new population and you use that old map. And that's not the case. They start all over. And they cannot consider incumbent addresses. That's verboten, and they have to adjust the lines according to the criteria as laid out in the Constitution. And there are 6 of those redistricting criteria, and they're all to be weighed equally. They can't be executed upon equally because they kind of compete with each other, but they all have to be considered equally. And so the new commission needs to follow those guidelines. And then, again, yes, you mentioned September. I think a lot of people are concerned that census data coming so late is going to be a problem. I don't think it will be. I think they'll be able to receive that data and still to get their work done on time. That's because there's a lot of work that actually has to get done ahead of that, including these public hearings where they go out and listen to the public. And this is where the public just plays a critical role in this process. And I encourage all your listeners to get out there, and once they see that a hearing's going to happen, and hopefully with the pandemic and restrictions easing, they'll actually be able to hold in-person meetings, and get the public involved and to come to those and you know, be engaged, listen to what they're saying, and supply their input on what their community of interest is or what's important to them in the redistricting process. So all of that kind of stuff can happen before a single line is drawn. And so even though that data won't come in till September, there's a whole bunch of work they're getting done now that will serve them well. And then once that data comes, then yes, the time is, the big clock's ticking, and they're going to have to really probably be meeting on weekends as well just to get it all done. Right. I know we did.
Right. Now, I know our congressional candidates or congressional candidates-to-be or even some of our state legislature candidates wish it was that easy for them, that they could wait that long. How does not having this process going now, waiting until September, even though it's not going to harm the redistricting process, in your words, Colleen Mathis, but what does this do for candidates who are running for state and national office?
Well, they're anxious, sure. And but, you know, they had to wait last time, too. Like, so, for instance, I can't remember our exact timeline, but we probably had our draft maps done so that candidates could sort of understand the contours of their districts, potential districts, by October, first week in October. I think we had a draft map ready to go, and the final maps weren't approved until January. So there was another,
of the election year.
Yeah,
wow.
because once those draft maps are drawn, the commission needs to take that out on the road again, out all over the state, and show people what they did and take more public comment and figure out what adjustments they want to make. And then the final maps are done. So yeah, the final ones weren't done till January. And there is a little bit of a difference too. Well, it's kind of a big difference. Last time we had to submit all of our maps to the Department of Justice and get them pre-cleared before the maps could even be used in the 2012 elections. And that process takes about 3 months at least. It can take longer if there are problems. Fortunately, our commission was able to get both our maps pre-cleared on the first try. Now, there was a Supreme Court challenge that was successful, Shelby County versus Holder, back in 2014, which gutted Section 5 of the preclearance of the Voting Rights Act, which is the preclearance requirement. And so this commission won't have to comply with that unless, you know, miraculously this gets changed again. But as of now, they do not have to comply with the preclearance requirement, which gives them a little more time too, so that there's not that 3 month gap. So I think with all those things built in, I think they're going to be fine. And I know that the candidates would like to know right now, frankly,
right,
what their lines are going to be, but they're going to have to wait a
not
little
to
bit.
Be.
Right.
They're going to have to wait. We're with Colleen Mathis this morning here in studio, the chair of the last Independent Redistricting Commission. We're talking about what do we make of Arizona not getting a new congressional district, and that surprised all of us. And what are the next steps? How does this impact the process of redistricting, getting new lines drawn, weighing the census data here in Arizona? We're going to go to our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about how does this impact or not CD2, CD3. Maybe Colleen will look into her magic eight ball and figure out what's going to happen there. What are those six criteria? And 2001, the Democrats got mad. 2011, the Republicans got mad. Who's going to get mad at the Redistricting Commission this year? A touchy process towards getting competitiveness and independent redistricting going here in Arizona. We'll be right back on 1030 The Voice. Tipping Point, this Drive Time Hour. We'll be right back.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300. The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in the Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them, and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. We're in studio here, this drive time hour of Tipping Point. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, with Colleen Mathis, the former chair of the Independent Redistricting Commission, made up of two Republicans, two Democrats, and an independent chair. Colleen Mathis was that independent chair in the last round. We're talking today on the heels of the news that Arizona will not get a new congressional district. What does that mean? And then as that involves census data, which then also informs the redistricting commission's work, what are the next steps for redistricting? But to kick us back off again here, Colleen, you mentioned there's six constitutional criteria that the commission must weigh when they are redrawing the lines of Arizona. What are those six?
Well, so essentially,
this is a test.
Yeah. Oh my
Colleen
gosh.
Colleen is not looking at notes.
And I need them, frankly. But so in redistricting, everything starts with the U.S. Constitution and the Voting Rights Act. And every state has to, no matter who's drawing the lines in the state. And we should mention, too, that, you know, Arizona is pretty unique in that regard. We have this independent redistricting commission that has that responsibility instead of the state legislature.
Right.
And so that's a really big deal. And citizens of Arizona should be really proud of that. But all states have to comply with the U.S. Constitution and the Voting Rights Act. And that means we have to have equal population in those states. And And so as we just alluded to, the fact that the denominator is going to stay the same this time around. We had 9 congressional districts last time. We're going to have 9 again.
Yep.
So you take that total population and you divide by 9. It would have been easier if we had gotten that 10th. It's easier math. But I still have the ideal population for a congressional district burned in my memory at 710,224 was the bogey that we were hitting.
Still no notes.
That exactly. That was, no, it really is in my head. And that number is going to change, of course, because we know the population grew in Arizona. It just didn't grow fast enough to get a 10th district. So there will be more people in those 9 districts. So it's going to be somewhere north of 710,000. And the commissioners, once they figure out the number of people in the actual ideal population in those congressional districts, they'll then start with a grid map. That's what it's called in the Arizona Constitution. And that's really just taking the total population, dividing by 9, and distributing it into 9 districts in a grid-like pattern, it's called, across the state. And so that's typically done by a computer. It's a computer exercise that just figures out, you know, let's get 9 districts on the map that have equal population. From there, then the commissioners need to adjust the criteria, the rest of the criteria. They have to consider all of them and adjust the lines according to those criteria. So the criteria are laid out in the Constitution, and they're pretty standard redistricting criteria that most states follow, like, for instance, compactness and contiguousness. All of these, frankly, should be to the extent practicable. That's the operative language that's in the Constitution, but they should adjust the lines and make districts as compact and contiguous as possible to the extent practicable. They should follow geographic boundaries like rivers, any state boundaries, so those can be man-made or natural boundaries like a mountain range. So all of these are to the extent practicable. Again, they have to respect communities of interest. Communities of interest are not defined. So that's where it's really important for the public to get engaged and say, hey, here's our community of interest. There are some kind of unassailable ones, so to speak, in Arizona. We have 21 Native American reservations, for instance. Those have, you know, very specific boundaries in our sovereign nations. So you could most people wouldn't argue with the fact that that's a community of interest. And the idea is that you're trying to keep communities of interest whole if they want to be kept whole. Sometimes it can make sense actually to have a community of interest that maybe wants more representation. And so they don't mind being divided or split, for instance. And I would argue that more representation can be better sometimes than less, but there can be times where you want to keep those communities of interest whole. And then competitiveness.
I was going to say, that's the one that your crew focused on.
Yeah. Well, I would say as a political independent, it is a criterion that I'm interested in. Frankly, I like to see a level playing field. I'm not a partisan. I don't want to see safe Republican districts or safe Democratic districts. I want to see competitive seats. And by competitiveness, that means you can get as close to 50-50 in registration, voter registration, between R's and D's as possible. So that has so many benefits. I think it encourages you to get out and vote. You know, we have in our midst the most competitive district in the nation, and that's CD2. I happen to reside in CD2. It's always been a pretty competitive district, meaning that R's and D's are pretty pretty close in terms of registration in that district. But that district swung back and forth between, you know, Republican and Democratic representation over the past 10 years. And frankly, I like that. I think it makes those representatives more responsive to their constituents. They have to listen to both sides.
Do you think this, if you had to look into your magic eight ball, do you think that this Independent Redistricting Commission is going to focus on that criteria in the same way, or will there be another criteria? You mentioned these are competing criteria. What do you think will be the focus of this commission?
Well, what I hope that the commission will do is follow the Arizona Constitution and and the case law that has already been established. There's precedent now because the first commission actually was sued by Democrats for not considering competitiveness enough, and it went all the way to the Arizona Supreme Court.
This is 2001.
Yeah, so I think the case maybe was decided by 2009. I'm not sure the actual date, but we had that precedent established for us, so we didn't have to fight it. We knew what the Arizona Supreme Court said, and that was they have to weigh all those criteria equally. And it's actually, I've heard some rumblings that this commission actually is saying that there's a hierarchy associated with those criteria. There is
not. That's going to be interesting.
It is. And I think it's dangerous to go that route because they will be sued on that fact again if that happens, because it's just not... it's not what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to weigh all the criteria equally, and then you have to actually execute. And you can't, when you execute them, unfortunately, you can't do them equally because, as you mentioned, they compete with each other. So it's very hard to sometimes make all those things come together. It's like a big puzzle.
It's a big puzzle. Democrats sued in 2001. Republicans have been very upset. You hear it now as the new commission is going on. Which party is going to be upset after this commission is done? Give us your best guess.
Well, you know, frankly, in our commission, it's a great question. You really want both sides to be mad at you at the end of it, which, you know, in our case, they were. The Democrats didn't think we drew enough competitive districts, and the Republicans didn't think we drew enough safe Republican districts. So they thought we could draw one more safe Republican district at least, and we drew four safe ones, and we had drawn two safe Democratic seats, and that's because of the Voting Rights Act, and then we drew three competitive, and the Democrats wanted to see another competitive district drawn. But this is where those criteria compete with each other. You got to pay attention to all of them, follow all of them, and when you do that, there's only so many people in the state of a certain stripe, so to speak, that you can put into these districts. And so once you comply with the Voting Rights Act and get those minority districts drawn, that leaves only so many people to distribute elsewhere in the state. So they do compete with each other, and it's a really challenging balance act that the commission's going to have to perform. But they just have to weigh all of them equally, create a really good record, frankly, because, you know, we had two suits, we had five total, and we won all five of our lawsuits. The commission prevailed, but two of those went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and on one of those it was about our work product, and it was a unanimous decision in our favor. And that's because we created a really great record of everything we did. And I really encourage this commission to do the same thing. They need to be transparent in all of their dealings and record it all so that later, unfortunately, I mean, you'd like to think this you could avoid litigation, but I really don't think you can, unfortunately. So as long as they create a good record, they'll be able to defend themselves well.
Colleen Mathis, former chair of the Independent Redistricting Commission, formed in 2011 after the last census. We'll have you back on as the commission starts to gear up with hiring. We'll talk some CD2, CD3. But thanks for an update this morning, and stay safe out there.
You too. Thanks so much, Zach.
We'll be back, Tucson, after the break. Don't go anywhere.
Money Minute and CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 10:30, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in the Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them, and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens football facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser, now joined via our live line by Cedric Cook of the group Pillars and Bridges, a group looking to build bridges and relationships between neighbors and law enforcement, and to have the hard and productive conversations we need to have to move forward. Cedric, good morning to you, sir. Thanks for being on.
Good morning, Zach, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, this is great. I've been looking forward to this conversation. So first things first, did I say that right? What is Pillars and Bridges, and how did you guys start this and why? Give us the skinny.
Sure. You pretty much hit the nail on the head, honestly, with that description. So essentially, we started last year around this time with just a simple conversation. It was right after the George Floyd incident, essentially, in Minneapolis. And then we started to have some issues here in Tucson with riots and protests and things like that. Not to a severe extent, but enough for me to sit back and be like, okay, we got to do something. We got to figure it out. Like, Tucson can't turn into everywhere else, in my opinion. So I reached out to a friend of mine who was a former sergeant on the police force, Nathan Tolgren. And I said, hey, man, is there somebody in the department that you can put me in touch with so I can have a sit down with? And he said, yeah, let me get back to you. And about a couple of days later, he sent me Chad Kazmar's number, who was the deputy chief at the time. And him and I sat, decided to have a conversation, wanted to sit down and have a conversation together. And we sat for about 2.5 hours that day, the first time we met. And we just went into our personal history, things that we are looking to, you know, that I was looking to do within the community as far as what I wanted to see, what their vision was, as far as TPE goes. So it was a pretty extensive conversation at that moment. And it was really, Chad's, push to say, hey, do you have anybody, that looks that thinks like you and kind of wants to sit, you know, sit down and have a conversation. And I essentially just put a Facebook post out, man, and said, hey, is there anybody that wants to sit down and have a conversation and, with the police department and try to figure out, you know, how we can better this situation between the police department and our community. And about 6-7 individuals answered that call. And that's kind of how Pillars and Bridges started. It was really from a Facebook post, man. And ever since then, we've been having our monthly, bi-weekly conversations with the police department, as far as trying to figure out things like that. We've sat in some hard, you know, personal meetings with them, you know, discussing our experiences as community members, what other people have experienced, and we've gotten, you know, some education as well from them. We've been out to the academy, we've gone on ride-alongs. We've done some observations again in the academy to figure out their training, how they're training them, what they're training and things like that, and being able to speak to that. So we've been blessed to be in a unique position, to be able to try to better, how Tucson and the police department, interact with each other, but to also separate the Tucson police department from the other incidents and things that are going on around the country. So.
It's powerful. Do you feel like that conversation is mostly being had by Pillars and Bridges in the community, I just don't feel like there's often a lot of conversation around getting everyone around a table and having real conversation. There seems to be a lot of division and animosity being created around this topic. Certainly, as we've heard calls to defund the police, we've had calls to adjust the budget of the police. We've seen some of the angst, as you mentioned, here in Tucson, not to the same extent as we've seen around the country. But was Pillars and Bridges created in some respect because there wasn't a lot of those other conversations going around to find common ground and unity to actually solve some of these problems going forward?
There aren't any other ones. In essence, there aren't any other of those conversations that are being had anywhere in the country that I know of, where you have, you know, people who look like myself and others, right, who are willing to sit down at the table and have these conversations. It just doesn't happen. And again, if there is, I salute those people. But to be honest with you, I don't know that those conversations are being had anywhere. And that's the reason why Pillars and Bridges is here. Because we are willing to as a community are willing to have that, and you know, so is Tucson Police Department, so they get some praise in that too for being willing, open and honest and transparent enough to sit down and say, yeah, we need some help, like how can we be better, and that's what we're trying to get to. But we do find our oppositions as well. There are still people that don't want to have a conversation with them at all, which is okay. We get that, but we're here as a voice for our community and for the community to sit back and say, it's okay, like, you let us know, we can go and have this conversation for you. So tell us what you're feeling, tell us how you're feeling and what you want to see change, and we'll have that conversation for you. So we do run into some opposition here as
for
well.
Sure. We're with Cedric Cook this morning, a founding member of the group Pillars and Bridges in Tucson. Before we go to our first break, and we've got another section to go here on this together, Cedric, but give us let us be a fly on the wall of the conversations that you're having. You're bringing together a diverse group of people, not just in terms of community and our law enforcement, but also a great diversity of ethnicity and race and background into those rooms. What is the pulse of Tucson that you're hearing on this issue of policing, safety, community policing? We hear, Cedric, I think the very strong voices on either sides of this. We hear from the Black Lives Matter and the Blue Lives Matter. What's happening in these rooms when you get folks together? What do people think about public safety in Tucson?
Tucson is no different than anywhere else. There's disparities in the numbers and when it comes to people of color being, you know, pulled over at a higher rate or anything, you know, than people of not, you know, non people of color. So Tucson still has its challenges, and we're trying to figure out why that is, why those numbers are so high when we're, you know, a lesser of the population, but we're a higher number of stops and use of force. So we got to try to figure that out. And that's some of the conversation that we're having those are hard conversations to have, right? TPD has to say, we agree. why is that? How do we fix that number? And they've done that by putting out their dashboard that they have on their site that shows that these numbers do exist. So we're not making these numbers up. We're not, falsifying anything. TPD has put these numbers out themselves, which I think is a good deal on their side. But those numbers do exist, and we're trying to figure out how we get those numbers down or at least make them even. Right. We don't want to decrease it, but let's make them even. Let's make those numbers even if that's what we're going to do, or decrease it altogether. So that's some of the hard, those conversations from both sides that we're trying to deal with, where you do have, people who are from Black Lives Matter. And yeah, they have every right to feel that way because these are real things that happen. So, but then you also, like you said, the Blue Lives Matter, who are on the opposite end of that. We're just, it's an education thing for all sides, I think, is where we're at now, is saying, like, these things are happening here too. How do we fix it? So,
Cedric, we'll get into the weeds a little bit on the other side of the break. Yeah. My last question before we go there. You're working with a cross-section of Tucsonans. It's not the whole city, but I think it's a solid cross-section. Do you think Tucsonans as a whole want to defund the police?
As a whole, no. There's a small portion of it I think that does, and I think that term is used loosely, and it doesn't really, they don't really know what they mean when they're asking for that. So I think, but it's a small section. I don't think it's a Tucson as a whole, to be honest.
We're going to go to our last break of the hour. When we come back, Cedric, I want to ask you, where do we go post Derek Chauvin sentence? You're actually having the conversations across diverse interests in the same room, same place to figure that out. I want to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. What comes next? What does Tucson want out of its law enforcement and its relationship with its law enforcement? We'll get Cedric Cook's thoughts on that. Founding member of the group Pillars and Bridges when we come back here on Tipping Point. Don't go away.
From Oro Valley to Vail and everywhere in between, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Thursday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. We're back here on this beautiful Friday in the 1030 The Voice studios. This hour of Tipping Point, in-depth news, conversation, and talk about people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We're on the air now with Cedric Cook, a founding member of the group Pillars and Bridges, creating conversation between law enforcement and the community to figure out how do we move forward and collaborate and find common ground to solve the issues that face us. Cedric, I want to jump right back in. You're in the room with a diverse group of Tucsonans who are committing to these difficult conversations post George Floyd, post Derek Chauvin. What is Tucsonans' agenda for public safety and public safety accountability in Tucson? You mentioned that the cross-section you work with does not want to defund, but they are sitting at the table and asking the questions. Why do we get pulled over more? Americans, Cedric, I think, want a resourced police department, but they want greater accountability, they want less mistakes, and they want restorative justice. Is that what's happening in Tucson? What are you hearing from your crew?
So, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely correct. I mean, people want some type of consistency, right? So accountability is the biggest thing. There seems like there's no accountability for actions that come about when a certain situation like the George Floyd situation happens, as you can see, that's changed a little bit, but there's still a long way to go. We're basically looking for, anytime something happens out of policy, then there's a price to pay for that, whether, it be whatever the situation, whatever that comes down as, that's what we're looking for, is that people are just held accountable for their actions more. And when they step outside of policy, that's when it becomes an issue. And, TPD has a pretty good, handle on some of those situations, but we are also here to kind of help shape that and mold that a little bit better. So Tucson, again, can essentially be a model for agencies around the country of how you're supposed to, one, interact with the community, and then two, hold your own accountable for their actions. So,
Cedric Cook, a quick follow-up question. The city of Tucson is going to begin its budgeting process. It's going to pass a fiscal year budget that will account for a certain amount of funding for a certain amount of police officers. You're in a room where police officers, I'm sure, are saying we're heading towards a low 700 count, which is 200 to 400 less than a city of our size. We're not getting paid enough. There's not enough of us. There's some in the community that would say, great, that's actually where we want to go with this. What are people saying in the rooms you're in, Cedric Cook, as you're bringing the community and law enforcement together? What's the solution? What's the sweet spot?
You're getting both from both sides. So that's the beauty of what we do. You're going to hear that from both sides, right? You're going to hear the defund and like, yeah, let's do it. Or let's abolish it. Let's get rid of it all together. Then you have the ones that are like, no, it's too practical here. Let's figure it out. Let's maybe, use some of those funds for more training or better training in certain areas. You know, there's also the big mental health situation that comes up. You know, how do we handle those situations with those types of calls and having officers go to those types of things? So, you know, it's tough because, you know, there's so much in there, you know, and like I said, we're just trying to do our best to try to help TPD, you know, see, you know, where the community is coming from and understand. But at the same time, you know, we need the community to kind of support our law enforcement in the way once, you know, when they find out how TPD is different from other areas. That's the other thing, too, is that will hopefully allow more officers to, you know, kind of stay on the job and bring those numbers back up. When they feel that support from the community, I think that's a huge thing that we're facing as well, outside of the budget and the money. It's just about the support, right?
Cedric Cook, I want to leave this in your hands. We've got about two and a half minutes left. Maybe taking off the hat where you're necessarily speaking for Pillars and Bridges, maybe it's the same. Yeah. But what's your call to action to the community? If you had to give us the Cedric Cook advice on this sensitive issue, what do you want to see from this community? And then you guys have something going on this weekend I wanted you to promote as well. We've got 2 minutes. I want to leave it with you.
Yeah. Just be open. Just be open to learn and listen is really what it boils down to. That's really all that I can say to the community is just be open and willing to learn and hear from all sides of the table, not just one. And that's the only way that communication and we can move forward as a community. So,
I love it. Cedric, what do you guys have going on tomorrow? It's tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, man, May 1st, at Mansfield Park, we are going to be doing our quarterly Unity in the Community, where we distribute food to our community with the help of TPD and some, you know, city officials. You know, the great Laura Conover will be out there helping us and her staff. But we have over 30,000 boxes of food right now that we're 30,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
That we are going to be distributing tomorrow to that community in that area. So anybody's welcome to come. You don't need anything. Just drive in, drive out, and grab your food. And we'll also there to help with other resources if we need it as well, if you need it as well. So yeah, 10 a.m. to 2 in that area. Volunteers, be there please at 9:30 if you want to show up and help out. We love to have you guys.
I love it. Cedric Cook, thank you for the conversations you're leading and the common ground you're finding. We'll keep chatting and keep doing what you're doing and stay safe out there.
I appreciate you, Zach. Thank you for your time, sir. You do the same.
Thank you, sir. That does it for our show today. When we come back next week, we'll talk to City Council candidate Val Romero. We'll talk Vail Unified School District. Michael Crow, president of ASU, Congresswoman Ann Kirkpatrick. You're going to want to be with us next week. Until then, stay safe and healthy out there. Hugh Hewitt up next. Bill Buckmaster after that. Take care, Tucson.